AKA, better known as Akeem, the co-host, coming live and direct. Want to continue our wonderful, wonderful discussion that we have been having, talking about some of our giants, our legends, our ancestors, those who laid down much of the foundation before us. You know, many would say some of our heroes of yesteryear, but also many of our what would be should be considered heroes of today. The people have been very, very fascinated. People, men and women, who laid the foundation in which Lady Liberty stands on. Those who are beacons of light, like the torch that stands above her shoulders, people who have made this great nation absolutely great because of some of their contributions, some of their rich and, grand accomplishments and contributions to enlighten us and help paint a clear narrative of not only the American black experience, but the overall American experience. And I know that that term, that name, that word can seem a little, beyond most of our thought process at times. However, I must say, continuing on our discussion, talking about Booker T. Washington, you know, we covered Sister Burroughs in the beginning to jump it off. The first lady was first, and then we added on by continuing our discussion by talking about the intellectual, the astounding W.E.B. Du Bois, and now we're talking about yet another accomplished, well-accomplished, and phenomenal legend who laid down a legacy before us. He was also what I would consider an intellectual, in spite of what some may be aware of. He was definitely scholarly. He definitely was an educator, an author, an orator, and an advisor to the President of the United States. Between 1890 and 1915, in fact, Washington was the preeminent, the dominant leader in the American black community. And, you know, Booker T. Washington, it's not just fascinating for one or two reasons, but this guy, let me tell you, Booker T. Washington was, he was a complex individual, I must say, who lived during a precarious time in advancing racial equality. You know, on one hand, you know, he was openly supportive of American blacks taking a back seat to whites, while on the other hand, you know, he secretly financed several court cases challenging segregation. By 1913, Washington had lost much of his influence. The newly inaugurated Wilson administration at that time was cool to the idea of racial integration and American black equality. He was born a slave on a Virginia farm in Washington in 1856, I believe. He rose to become, as I said before, one of the most influential intellectuals of the late 19th century. In 1881, he founded the Tuskegee Institute, you know, a black school in Alabama, a school that happens to be considered a historically black school devoted to training teachers. At the time, Washington was also behind the formation of the National Negro Business League. 20 years later, and he served as an advisor to the President Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft. You know, although Washington clashed with many other leaders in the American black circle, such as W.E.B. Du Bois and Drew Eyre, for his seemingly acceptance of segregation, he is recognized for his educational advancements and attempts to promote economic self-reliance among American blacks across the landscape of the most anguished era of American race relations. He strode the self-assured and influential, indeed, you know, he was a foremost educator, a power broker, an institution builder of his time. Washington was also in 1881 founded Tuskegee Institute. He devoted to the industrial and moral education and to the training of public school teachers. From his southern small town base, he created a national, and I do mean a national political network of schools, newspapers, and the, as I said before, the National Negro Business League, founded in 1901. In response to the age of Jim Crow, Washington offered the doctrine of accommodation, acquiescence in the social and political inequality for blacks while training, and then for economic self-determination in industrial arts. You know what? What I want to do, if I can find it, there is a pretty cool song. I just wanted to listen to it. I want to see if the cue is going to participate and allow me to do exactly that. I don't know if it will, but if so, then we could get a little music for a moment. Cause I definitely want to do that. I feel like we definitely need a nice temporary song, just something to really celebrate. Cause I like celebrating our ancestors. I like celebrating the elders that stood tall, the giants whose shoulders that we stand on today. I like you know, celebrating those who have contributed to society in a variety of different ways, well, you know, whether we agree or disagree, you know, about their contributions. And so, you know, unfortunately, it appears that the cue will not allow me to play a tune or two. Looks like I'm going to have to do a alternative and see how that works out. So forgive me if the sound isn't as grand, but I'm going to try something, a little experiment, just to see if it works. And if it works, we'll get a little music. And I don't know how good this is going to come out, but let's test this out and see. And you guys are in the queue, so you'll let me know if it sounds ridiculous or if you can hear it clearly. So give me one moment. Set it up for you. And let's try a little Sam Cooke. He's going to come. See if I could get that going. Gotta love modern technology, though. Gotta love it. I think here we go. That was Sam Cooke, the amazing, the phenomenal Sam Cooke, one of my very, very, very favorite of all times is Sam Cooke. And I think his lyrics, the music, that particular song was right on. I mean, and it's to me, it's not only the soundtrack of today, but it's the soundtrack of yesteryear. You know, the word change, that operative word change was used by our current president. But I love how Sam Cooke brought it to the table. And, I mean, I know y'all felt that. I surely did. I mean, one of our all-time level legends. And so as we talk about change, let's reflect on some of the change that was taking place during the time that Booker T. Washington graced this very the very ground, the surface that we call Earth that we stand on today. And some of the information that I talk about today, I know it's going to sound like, you know, I'm repeating some of the information, but hey, you know, it's a lot of stuff to digest, a lot of layers to this guy. And, you know, Booker T. Washington, you know, was like I said, one of the most famous leaders in America, particularly in the American black circle of 1895, all the way up to 1915 in particular. He was also considered, like I said, one of the most influential educators of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And so far as he controlled the flow of funds to many of the black schools and the colleges. As I said before, he was born a slave on a small farm in Virginia, back country to be exact, for those you know, those who know about the South. And he worked in the salt furnaces in the coal mines of West Virginia as a child, and he was determined to educate himself. He traveled hundreds of miles under great hardships until he arrived and broke, tired, and dirty, as some would say, at Hampton Universities. One of his famous quotes is, "In all things that are purely social, we can be as separate as the finger, yet one as the hand, in all things essential to mutual progress." You know, he became a star pupil under the tutelage of General Samuel Chapman Armstrong. I think Pianki mentioned him yet, was talking about this yesterday, and which was the head of Hampton. And Washington was teaching at Hampton when General Armstrong called him aside after chapel. You know, he said he had received a letter from some gentleman in Alabama asking him to recommend a white principal for a colored school they wanted to open there in the town of Tuskegee. So in 1881, Washington founded Tuskegee Normal and an industrial institute on the Hampton model in the Black Belt of Alabama. Starting with the broken-down building, he used his ability to win the trust of white Southerners and Northern philanthropists to make Tuskegee into a model school of industrial education. He reassured whites that, you know, nothing in his education program challenged, you know, the white supremacy or offered economic competition with whites. He accepted racial subordination as a necessary evil, at least until such time as blacks could prove themselves worthy of full civil and political rights. As far as blacks were concerned, Washington insisted that industrial education would enable them to lift themselves up by their bootstraps and escape the trap of sharecropping and debt. So in September 1895, Washington became a national hero. He was invited to speak at the 1895 Cotton States and International Exposition in Atlanta. And there, Washington publicly accepted disfranchisement and social segregation as long as whites would allow black economic progress. So you have to understand the state of the South, too, at this time. Unlike Du Bois, you know, this guy was actually living in the South at the time, and, you know, the agreement was segregation as long as whites would allow black economic progress, educational opportunity, and justice in the courts. One of his quotes was, "The wisest of my race understand that the agitation of questions of social equality is the extremest folly, and that progress in the enjoyment of all the privileges that will come to us must be the result of severe and constant struggle rather than artificial forcing. The opportunity to earn a dollar in a factory just now is worth infinitely more than to spend a dollar in opera houses. So, you know, this is part of some of his ideas. Washington further publicized himself and his program by publishing his autobiography, Up from Slavery, in 1901, who many have said was, you know, ghostwritten. That's still debatable. He also founded the National Negro Business League, as I said before, in 1900. You know, President Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, as I said before, were two of the guys in whom he worked with. You know, both men with a deep racial prejudice used Washington as an advisor because he accepted racial subordination. He was able to recommend candidates for minor political posts that traditionally were given to blacks. The industrialists, who controlled the financing of many black schools in the South, depended upon his advice, should receive funds. So in 1903, Washington's policies received a challenge from within the black community. W.E.B. Du Bois in particular, then a scholar at Atlanta University, attacked Washington's philosophy in the book The Souls of Black Folk. An organized resistance to Washington grew within the black intellectual community. But as far as the majority of middle class and working class blacks, they were concerned, Washington remained their man. You know, his popularity enabled him to neutralize criticism, sometimes by you know, devious means, some would say, such as bribing newspapers to report false and unflattering reports of his critics. Because of his image as a counselor, Washington seldom could publicly criticize injustice. Yet behind the scenes, you know, he basically had PR at that time. He did finance court cases challenging segregation and tried to mitigate some of its excesses. So on the surface, he appeared one way, but behind the scenes, he did finance court cases challenging segregation and tried to mitigate some of his excesses. In fact, when Woodrow Wilson became president in 1913, Washington lost his influence in the federal government, which Wilson helped segregate further. So meanwhile, a new era had begun in the black community, and a younger generation would no longer accept white supremacy. So under the leadership of Du Bois and some others, they would, you know, demand their political and civil rights, and we're going to cover that more and more in depth when we move on to Brother Marcus Garvey, and we'll sprinkle a little Frederick Douglass as well. In this moment, I think I'm going to have to go to a quick song because for some reason my switchboard is not acting correctly. So I want you guys to bear with me for a moment because I'm going to play music. I wasn't intending on doing that again because that's not typical here. But I'm going to have to do that temporarily so I can fix some of these BR kinks for the moment. And since I'm going to do that, since we started off, you know, with one of the premier amazing artists, you know, it's hard to follow it's hard to follow Sam Cooke. So since I gave you Sam Cooke, it's only right that I give you a little James Brown, right? I mean, right. I think I got to give you a little James Brown. So we're going to do a little James Brown show for a moment, and I ask that you guys be patient while I work through these BTR kinks in a moment. So we should be back shortly. Once I get this everything to work, so give me a quick second. I know y'all like, man, what's going on with the kinks? BTR people, BTR, you know how it is. Know how it is. So give me a second. Oh, I pushed the wrong button. Whew. BTR, gotta love it. Okay, here we go. James Brown. Nothing like a little bit of James Brown to get you moving, right? Yeah, so, yeah, obviously, we have to celebrate, and if we're going to celebrate, we got to celebrate right, right? So, of course, you know, in the essence of celebrating all things beautiful, including the beautiful heritage of the contribution of American blacks, why not celebrate the beautiful various hues, all engraving that wonderful melting pot we call Black America, America, Black African Americans. We've been everything. We've been Negroes. We've been slaves. I mean, we've been many things, and I couldn't say it better than James Brown. I mean, Black and I'm Proud, one of my favorites, of course. But not to belabor any longer on my opinions or fascination with amazing music and amazing artists. We got to continue to talk about this amazing guy, right? We want to continue to talk about the history. That's what we're here for, right? We're here to talk about the history. We're here to talk about and embrace loving one another, right? We're here to uplift our community, right? We're here to talk about the unity, talk about the love, talk about the quality and the richness and the texture and the wealth of this history that's been preserved and the legacy of men and women who've come before us, who've blazed the trail for those who stand tall today. I mean, we stand on the shoulder of giants. I think the host has entered the building, Mr. Talk himself.
Hey, what's going on, man? Oh, Lord, have mercy. I don't know what's going on. There's some bad weather going on or something, because, I'm telling you, I was having a hard time getting on today. But I made it. So, woo, we ready? Man, I heard what your beginning. Man, I'm telling you, you're playing some heck of a music, boy. I tell you, I ain't know you can go back that deep. Oh, my goodness. Woo. All right.
I had to do it.
You had to do it. All right. That's
yes,
right.
Sir.
Uphold the show. I hear you. All right, man. I'm telling you. So I want to give my shout outs real fast to Antoinette, my chat room coordinator. And, we got Butthurt 25, Divine Design, guest 1041, 1051, 1068, 1079, and New Jones in the chat room. Welcome, y'all. And then we got those on the chat room, of course, my co host who've been holding it down while I've been fighting this technology thing right here. You know, we got Mr. Michigan on the line. We got 111. We got Mrs. Talk on the line. Then we got another 111. So welcome, everybody. I'm glad to see y'all here. And, yes, today we bring it to the stage Mr. Booker T. Washington. That's right, y'all, because yesterday we had W.E.B. Du Bois. And, of course, Monday we had Nanny Helen Burroughs. So, as you see, we're going down a succession of individuals that not only paved the way for where we are today, but whose philosophies and beliefs can actually be transferred from their time to our time today, and we can take a look and see just how it has either progressed or withstood the stand of time as far as their beliefs. Now, Booker T. Washington, just like W.E.B. Du Bois, he was a very interesting cat. You know, and some of his points that he was making back then during his period of time is still pretty much viable today, because a lot of people feel the same as he does today. You know, they say it in a different way, but the message is the same. You know, African-American communities or black communities or colored communities, however you want to put it, you know, a lot of individuals say, we have to offer something to be a part of this society. Basically, you know, let's get a trade. I think that's what Michael was saying a lot of yesterday. You know, let's get us a trade to where we will be a valuable part of society. And I do believe that's what Booker T. Washington emphasized. You know, and I heard you mention his speech in Atlanta in 1895, and he said, you know, Booker T. Washington did say, he asked black people to cast down your buckets where you are. In other words, stop fighting, put your buckets down, you know, pick up a trade, make yourself valuable to where you are right now, and instead of being a victim, make yourself a valuable part of the society. You know, of course, a lot of individuals had problems with that, because, you know, they felt that he was cowering down to the white society. Of course, his beliefs made him popular, very popular with the wealthy whites, both on the northern and the southern side of the country. So, and once again, we're looking at another individual that was quite complex in his beliefs. But, you know, at the same time, he, behind the scenes, he was working toward equality for all, for black people. So, you know, once again, you see them, you see these men and women, you know, they pushing one thing because that's what they have to do, but on the underbelly or the underground, they're working toward the unification of all our African Americans all together. And I think that's we're really going to have a great conversation today about the Booker T. Washington. I mean, I hope I hadn't repeated it too much of what you said already, because I didn't get you know I didn't get to hear a lot of it. But you know, and in his speech in 1895, he also asked Southern white owners, to cast down their buckets as well into the rich labor force source that was offered by the blacks. Now, if you really take a look at that one right there, you can go back to our, the lady we talked about Monday, Nanny Helen Burroughs, because if you remember, her school was about teaching, you know, proper etiquette and how to act, you know, if I recall correctly, and I don't think it's been that long. So, you know, and now it's beginning to follow a pattern as into, you know, blacks are being told, look, stop being the victim and get you a trade, you know, get something that you can offer society to where you will be viable no matter what. They won't have to treat you like dirt because you're offering something that they need. You know, so, and I think it's really interesting as we go through the rest of the week, because we got Marcus Garvey and Frederick Douglass on tap for the next 2 days, as you see how all these individuals' beliefs and philosophies kind of fall in line and intertwine with each other, you know, to a point to where they come together, but yet they separate also, and that what made them the individuals that they were. All right, am I talking too much now, y'all?
Absolutely not.
I'm saying, I got to catch up. You know, because you got nothing to say. I remember I heard you mention Booker T. Washington's school, you know, and he, you know, at that school, he taught farming, you know, handcrafts such as bricklaying, carpentry, you know, blacksmithing. He even later on got into entrepreneurship. Now, if you really think about it, aren't those the same things that we push today, especially when you look at the entrepreneurship? Aren't those the same things that we say we need to get into today?
Absolutely.
And still today, you still have those that will fight you against that and say, well, no. But it's the same thing that he was saying back then that we're saying today. You know, go out there, get you an education, find you a skill that is that will make you essential part of society that is wanted, and that where they will come to you. Don't go to them. You know, and it's just crazy. And the other thing I was looking at when I was reading that Booker T. Washington, he opposed African-American migration to the North. And I thought that was really interesting. Now, why would you stop? Because apparently, you know, if you go up North, you know, that supposedly was where the free land was. That's what I'm going to call it, free land. You know, but those of us that had done research also know that, you know, there was slavery up north as well. So I think, you know, there was a misconception, you know, that all completely up north was free. I think now once you got into Canada or places like that, then yes. But as far as New York, Virginia, you know, that wasn't always as free as, you know, you would like the. They want you to believe, you know, and this Booker T. Washington guy was something else, you know, because he secretly participated in lawsuits, you know, for things like voter registration tests, you know, blacks from being on juries, you know, or having separate facilities on railroads and things of that nature. So even though he on the outside he was pushing for one thing, you know, on the inside he was really working toward equality. And I think that's something that is often not put forward enough. So, you know, Booker, he was a man. When you hear that name Booker T, you know, automatically you go back to old school. T, man, who? You know, but I don't know. That name is something else. Whew. But I think Booker T. Washington's philosophy had a lot to do with his childhood. You know, because in his childhood, he did spend his early childhood in actual slavery. So I think he had a different outlook on how to survive compared to those that were already free and was, you know, standing up against the society or the way things were back then. So it's, you know, Booker T, I think his philosophy was something of, okay, we don't make waves on the top. You know, on the top we let everything be smooth, but like a duck. You know how a duck was so smooth on the top, but on the bottom he paddling like crazy to get where he got to go. I think the Booker T. Washington's theory was and beliefs were something in that realm, or use that as my throat is dry. Use that as a philosophy, because that's the way it seemed to me. All right, y'all, I got to go get something to drink. So I'm opening up the phone line, so y'all want to call in and give your contributions, come on. But I'm going to let my co-host call for a moment while I go and get something to drink. Take it away now, Steve.
No problem. Man, you know, an interesting thing was mentioned yesterday. I don't know if it was Mike who brought it up. I do believe it was Mike who brought it up, but it was a very timely comment, and it was regarding Black Wall Street in Durham, specifically during that time. And I think the question was posed, and I don't know if I have it exactly. I'm sure hopefully he'll call in and correct me if I'm wrong. But it was regarding whether or not W.E.B. Du Bois, whether he was in agreement with the activity that was taking place, the entrepreneurship and the ingenuity. I mean, I'm saying the wrong word, but he said pretty much the entrepreneurial spirit and the way that we were building up our own communities at the time. And I found a fascinating thing, piece of information regarding both Booker T and W.E.B. Du Bois and their views on it, because apparently in Nathan Garrett is one of the individuals who talks about downtown Paris Street, which was the address of Black Wall Street in Durham, Carolina. And he was a black-owned financial district just around the corner from Main Street in the heart of Durham's, which was considered a predominantly white business district. I think if I quote it right, according to him, to Garrett, who I believe was the head of Duke University at the time, if I'm not mistaken, who happens to also be a descendant of African ancestry. He was unique it was unique in Durham, he said, because you had this concentration of black executives and professional people who were doing the same things as whites in their communities. He was a Duke trustee and chairman of the what was called the Paris Street Advocacy Group. Now, as early as 1910, it says that Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois, they both visited Durham and hailed it as a national model. This is where these guys agreed, so this is why it's so major. They agreed that this place was a national model for black middle class, and from the 1890s until the 1960s, Paris Street was the home of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance, which was the nation's oldest and largest black-owned insurance company. The company moved to Chapel Hill Street in 1966. Now, Paris Street was also home to two banks, the Mechanics and Farmers, and the Mutual Community Savings, which offered home mortgage and small business loans to Durham's African American community. So Garrett and others, they wanted to use the history of Black Wall Street as not only a model for revitalizing Durham's downtown, but also as a model to Africans all over, and establishing a museum without walls, so to speak, on Paris Street. In his words, not mine, he said, if we want to tell the story, we want to invite visitors to learn about the history and see a redeveloped downtown area. And I think that might actually be some relatively recent, some of that information. But I just found it fascinating that during the time of Wall Street, of what we call Black Wall Street in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, these two guys who differed on a variety of different things agreed that this was not only a good thing, but that this was a great thing, a thing that should be celebrated. It was a sort of blueprint for many to use and to follow in the continued development and the continued expansion of equality and self-empowerment for the African-American community. And so it's fascinating to me just to see these two guys who had great ideas in their own right, but yet differed philosophically in some areas. Yet when it came to the well-being of the African American community, they shared that one common goal, that when it comes to empowering our own in every area, education, economics, that we are to be, you know, the architects and the initiators of that change, that empowerment, that development within our own communities. And they looked at the growth, the progression, the prosperity, the wealth as a good thing. This is something they agreed on. And so I just thought that was phenomenal, because it was a question that was posed yesterday. What their thoughts, you know, what did they think? And there's actually an article that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote regarding thoughts on it. And I hope I can find it sometime before the end of the show. But man, I was excited. I was excited just to discover this little tidbit, because for me, it was a question that was posed, and there was actually an answer that was documented that supported not only answered that, but gave us another window into some of the ideas in a moment in time in which these two giants in history actually agreed on something regarding the African American community, and that to me was empowerment, because it also says that W.E.B. Du Bois was actually a supporter of a lot of what, you know, Booker T. Washington and the whole Pan-African movement, so to speak, and the whole self-empowerment and to do for self initiative and attitude for the African American family. So, which you know is sometimes, you know, hard to discern what his thoughts were on that. So I just thought that was kind of it was interesting for me, because I discovered something new. That was something new to me. what's your thoughts on that, Mr. Dawg?
Well, I do believe that, you know, when it comes to Black Wall Street, and you look at what these two gentlemen spoke of, I think it's more prevalent if you look at what Booker T. Washington was saying, because Black Wall Street, you have to understand, Black Wall Street was, we had our own. We had our skills. We had our own businesses. You know, we had our own little economic setup going to where we were self-sufficient then. You know, and a lot of the white society came to see those on Black Wall Street for services. And I do believe that is the ultimate goal of what Booker T. Washington was actually saying when he said, go ahead and you know, get your trade. They'll get your education in, You know, but do something that is going to require them to come see you, not for you to go see them. And I do believe he felt that if we as a black people or a community did that, you know, eventually what he was saying was, you know, even though they treat it like this now, you know, if we give them a service they need, you know, things will eventually, work its way out to where we'll be equal. Of course, the way he spoke about it and the way he put it sometimes would, sound like he was just succumbing to segregation and, you know, the racial division. But I think if you really take a look deep down in what he was saying, it was Black Wall Street was the ultimate goal, and it was achieved. You know, let's see. You know, because he said that African Americans must concentrate on educating themselves, learning useful trades, and investing in their own businesses. Hard work, economic progress, and merit, he believed, would prove to whites the value of blacks to the American economy. And if you go and you look at Black Wall Street, that exactly is what happened. You know, Black Wall Street actually did have all that going on, to the point to where they had their own international trade going on. So that proved that it could be done. You know, but once again, you know, certain things happen and everything just turns around. So I think when you look at Black Wall Street and you think about what Booker T. Washington philosophy was, it fell right into place. It fell right into place. And individuals such as what's one of the bigger names they talk about today? Claude Anderson. If you take a look at some of the things that he's saying, it kind of falls within that philosophy. No, it really does. As in, we need to get our own resources, you know, and get our neighborhoods and things back together, start our own businesses, and make things happen. You know, to the point to where we, once again, will become a viable community and source in this country. So, you know, as I said before, when we started this week, you know, you have to take a look at all those things. And I say, you can look at them from back in the early 1900s, you know, late 1800s, and you can just follow the footsteps all the way through the years up until where we are now. And a lot of the philosophies are the same, just the wording has changed in them. And the people that saying it are different, and it's perceived in different ways. But the philosophy itself is the same. It's the same. You know, we have to, number one, educate ourselves. No matter who we talk about this whole week, that's one of the first things that they are saying. You have to educate yourself. You have to educate yourself. Because without knowing what you're doing, you're just going around in circles. He's just going around in circles. So I think, and look at some of the things that's being said. Because Washington also says something that I found very interesting that a lot of people do not talk about. And he mentioned, and we was talking to an all-white audience, he said, in all things social, we can be as separate as the fingers, yet one as the hand in all things essential to mutual progress. You know, and he also said, no race that has anything to contribute to the markets of the world is long in any degree ostracized. Better word, shut out completely. So, if we take a look at those things, in all things social, we can be as separate as fingers. Now, you look at your fingers on your head, because I know some of y'all did that anyway. Your fingers are separate. Right. Your fingers are separate. You move them separate. You can do, you move them one at a time and all that good stuff. All right. So socially, what he's saying is we can be separate. If you look at today's society, we are separate socially for the most part. You know, some would say, well, not as separate as we used to be. But if you look at it, and wherever you work at, if you work in somewhere or you go somewhere, there's a whole different group of ethnicities. Take a look. If you notice, the blacks are migrate with the blacks. The whites are migrate with the whites. Of course, you have those that the tweeners, I call the tweeners, that go in between. But for the most part, everybody sticks with their own. Socially, that is the truth. I know some of y'all are like, oh, he talking crazy now. But, I mean, that is the way it is. So when you say social, we can be as separate as the fingers, I feel that's what he's talking about. You know, we can have our own. You know, you have your own, you do this. But when it comes to things that is going to make everyone successful, entrepreneurship, you know, skills, education, we can work together on that. Why is that such a hard thing? Everybody with me? Y'all still with me out there? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
I'm definitely with you.
Lighting up.
You know, yes, sir.
You have to look at some of the things he was saying. You know, and you know, the final thing: no race that has anything to contribute to the markets of the world is long in any degree ostracized. In other words, what he's saying is, if you got something to contribute, man, they can't leave you out forever. You got to get; they're gonna have to let you in eventually. Prime example. Let's look at, you know, real fast. We gonna stay on this. Let's look at the Asians and the Indians. Now I'm talking Native Americans. I'm talking the Indians coming over from India and you know, over in that area. Even the Arabs, they come over here. They contribute. I mean, this and they know they own their businesses because they contributed to each other. They get the education. They go back, help each other. They come over here, open stores and things, and they're all over the place. Now, let's take a look at the African-American community. Now, we hit it big, and instead of contributing, throwing it back and contributing to our own, we contribute to other people. That way, they still become wealthy, but yet our own communities are going down because we're not contributing anything to it, because we, within our own community, are those fingers, and we still want to remain separate. Instead of forming up that fist and making it to one big, all-together blow, we choose to remain separate while everybody else is continuing to come together, make that big fist, and just standing pounding their way to success. Okay, y'all, I don't know where that came from, but
wow.
It just exploded in my head, and it made a lot of sense when I said it. But, I mean,
I like
if
it.
I take
like
a look
it.
At what Booker T. Washington was saying in just all that little sentence right there, that is, that, to me, personally, in my opinion, that is what he's saying. You know, if we come together, we can make that fist, and we can punch holes in anything we want to. But as long as we still decide to hang out with the fingers, you know, and keep them spread apart and separate, we can't do anything. And I do believe that was Booker T. Washington's ultimate philosophy. You know, we have to come together with whether we own the businesses or, you know, we have some type of trade to offer to where we are a valuable part of the community. You know, basketball, football, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, we are, you know, but that doesn't count. You know, that's one of those fingers out there doing whatever one of the fingers want to do. You know, you can say that's a thumb. That's a thumb because it's working separately. Oh my goodness! I don't know if I'm talking right today because I don't see no action going on in the chat room. The phone line's not open. I mean, I don't hop it. Ooh boy, I must be talking crazy today. All right, y'all.
No.
Again. The phone lines are open, 347-838-8622. Let us hear from you, man. Y'all know me and Cloud. We going all day talking like this. But we want to hear what some of y'all have to say. You know, y'all know we done did our homework. But what y'all got to say? I know some of y'all got something to say out there. Don't hold back. Come on, Chef Rob. I know you bake up cooking cakes and talking noise. All right, so 347-838-8622 is the number. All right.
Yeah, so. I know some of those brothers have something to add that's pretty phenomenal. So I would love to hear. And some of the sisters would definitely contribute in a phenomenal way. I think you touched on something that was real necessary, particularly when Booker T. Washington made that comment during that speech, and he said, "Cast down your buckets where you are, in all things that are purely social." You know, and that connected to the fingers. We can be as separate as fingers. So that he's also one of the forefathers of what they call boss politics, or that brand of boss politics. Anybody who ever watched the TV show Boss, that's a style of politics too that they, or you see House of Cards or something like that, Scandal and so on. So he was a very revered man in the sense that people knew that he had the power to shut people's careers down. I don't know how many people know that, but that's one of the reasons why some people clash with Booker T, because he could shut you down. He could shut you down in the media. He could shut you down and shut down your economics, your money, politically. So he had a lot of leverage, because some of the benefactors who may not have been for us were in his corner, so to speak, because they looked at him as their leverage. But he was cunning enough to also utilize those with a supremacist mindset as a form of leverage. And I think sometimes that's like you said, that's misconstrued, because we could easily just call him accommodationist and leave it there. But when we see that there was a surface level a character, a role, like we saw, like you see in some of those shows I mentioned that he played, for those in the forefront, but then behind the scenes, and this is strategic. This is the clever part about Booker T, and I think this is one of the things we can learn from him, is that he was what some people might call a frenemy. Some people might call him a frenemy, because you might have thought he was your friend, but while he was in your face smiling and genuinely like you, no matter where you came from, he was about his people. And I think we have to recognize this. I think, and I'm glad Mike is in, because like I said, he contributed some very valuable points yesterday, and I know he's gonna be able to add some more today. I hope you heard the part about W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T agreeing that the Black Wall Street, particularly in North Carolina Durham, was a model for the African American community, and they were excited about what was happening in that particular. That was one place where they both were endorsing a particular idea at the same time. So I thought that was phenomenal. I'm going to step back now.
All right. Wow. All right. I guess I got him on the line. I guess he's ready now. So without further ado, y'all, let's bring in Chef Rob to the conversation. All right, Chef Rob, what's going on, man?
What's going on? Hey, brothers, how we doing?
No, we're doing wonderful, brother. We're doing wonderful.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
you guys done a lot of research here. I only know bits and pieces about Booker T. Washington, E.B. Du Bois, and a few others I can add a little bit. But my thing is this. I'm going to switch it just a little bit because they really were for our people. And if you go ahead and you do the research on what they were actually doing, you're like, damn, we need to pay attention to that. But here's a bigger problem. When you're trying to go ahead and apply it to today, because a lot of people ain't listening, I heard for the last couple of days individuals saying, hey, look, these dinosaurs, we need to throw that out the window. I'm like, man, you make no sense. Because this was at a time where our people were successful. So you go ahead and look at what tore down those things. We also got to look at that. But these were good models we need to follow and go back to some of that and dust off that stuff and make it to work for us in the modern day. And it can be done. So when I hear this individuals, a couple of individuals say, hey, look, forget those dinosaur things, and they're not coming to the table with a new plan, but they want to criticize your plan. I was listening. Oh, man. I was riding around playing my Malcolm X this morning, you know, making people mad with his speeches. And one thing he was saying in one of the clips I got was, anytime that you – I'm going to try and paraphrase because I can't remember. The music was getting so loud, but the speech was good. He was talking about anytime you got a black person who don't want to stand up and fight white supremacy, they are a traitor to you and me. And that's the thing I want to go ahead and give to these individuals. If you ain't bringing nothing to the table, don't tear down what I'm trying to build, or don't go ahead and tear down what these other brothers have built.
All right. That I'm talking about.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, and you know, I'm glad you said it because you know, you one of the big proponents of Black Wall Street, also.
Exactly.
So, you know, and that's what I'm saying. If you really take a look at Booker T. Washington, what his philosophy was, that's exactly what he was talking about. And as you say, it's there. You know, it has been shown that it can succeed, but. You know, as I said, we got to make that fist, man. As long as we're still a part of them fingers, we're not going to get there again.
But the
example is there for us.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The opposition to that, as far as black folks concerned, has gotten greater. But with no solution for coming from their side. Nothing else to do. But let's go ahead and talk in circles and keep on talking about the problem while the patient continues to get sick. This the kind of if you ain't coming with no way to go ahead and resolve this issue, we need to come at them. I try to come at them and try to shut them down. Basically, and I've been saying this for the last few days also, I always hear what these people are against, but I don't hear what they're for. They don't come to the table and bring nothing. They just want to tear down what you're saying. So for me, like I said with Malcolm X, you know, if they ain't trying to go ahead and help this situation, they are enemies.
Well, brother, you know, we got a whole lot of those out there, and they're gonna be out there. You know.
Yeah. Speaking of Brother Malcolm, one of his quotes that I like, I'm gonna say two of them. One is when he says, "Power in defense of freedom is greater than power in behalf of tyranny and oppression, because power, real power, comes from our conviction, which produces action, uncompromising action." That's one of my favorites. And another one is off the top of my head that I could think of is you're not, I believe, supposed to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong, no matter who says it. So those are kind of like on the lines of you know, that's not. I'm sure it's not exactly what Chef Rob was saying, but you know, I totally agree with him. You know, so many people try to fight against those true fighters out there and those people who are progressive and actually about positive change and making things happen. And we have to be careful about, you know, when we're talking about our beloved family and our beloved brothers and sisters, the queens and kings, we have to, you know, uplift and celebrate the positivity that they are generating around the world, instead of criticizing and looking for all the intricacies and the errors and the flaws and condemning a positive effort to motivate and to move us forward. And unfortunately, instead of oftentimes you see people, instead of championing those who are championing us forward and helping us to progress in whatever method and in whatever way that they're doing it on a positive note, sometimes we stand on the sidelines and spend more time condemning, confronting, and assaulting, you know, and insulting those who are not only well-meaning but are acting with meaning and helping us move forward. And you're right. We cannot bash our brothers and sisters who are doing something. I'm sure Chef Rob has a variety of different things he does outside. I'm particularly sure in the area of culinary. I'm sure he's doing amazing and phenomenal things. I remember hearing you talk about brothers like Brother Umar, Dr. Umar, and people like that at one point on this show. And so I know you really connected in that fight for progression for your people. So for someone, for example, to ever come at you, I know that would be unnecessary, because I'm sure that you're on the front line, like many of our brothers and sisters who are trying to push us forward. And I totally agree, and I appreciate the insight and enlightenment that you provided just in the short period of time that you've been on this show right now.
Thanks, brother. Dr. Umar was here last night. I spent some time at the lecture, and as a group, we talked a little bit later. Something else, I was on that side of Chicago because I've got wind of a few spaces that they're set up to go ahead and run a culinary program to teach individuals. So as we speak, you know, I stepped away a little bit. I just took the headphones off and sat to the side because I'm trying to go ahead and get this proposal together, because I got the information yesterday. I want to finish this today and get this to them tomorrow, because I don't got no damn time to lose or waste.
See,
that's what I'm talking about. See, brothers, about it.
I mean, you know, I was about to say, you know, that's providing one of those services that you know, you understand what I'm saying? That would actually, that help make you a valuable part of society. And, you know, we can turn that, once again, you know, that's one of those things where we can use to better ourselves and our community. You know, and shoot, Rob be doing the thing. I mean, me and Rob have them conversations sometimes. So I understand that, man, he be doing his thing. But if you go and you put all this in a nutshell, though, that is exactly what Booker T. Washington was all about. So like I say, you know, on the top side, he was like a duck, just looking smooth. But on the bottom, you know, he was fighting as hard for equality and, you know, the black community as anybody else was. But nobody took the time to take, and like I say a lot of times on the show, sometimes you have to stop and listen to what's being said instead of just jumping on everything you see. No, do your little homework. You know, back it up a little bit, and then you can understand what's really going on instead of just jumping on and say, he full of crap. And like Rob said, you know, we got those out there. They come to this show all the time. You know, they just come to the you know, spread the negative venom and, you know, keep it going. But, you know, like I always say, this is not the game room, so they're going to do what they want to, because it ain't happening here. So I understand what you're saying, Rob, and we, you know, individuals like us, you know, we just have to keep pushing and putting the information out there.
You know something else.
Go ahead.
You know, my biggest criticism from what I know, because I know the brother done a few more things, my biggest criticism of, and I think you were talking about W.E.B. Du Bois yesterday. Right?
Uh-huh.
Did I hear that? Because I was a little busy.
Yeah.
I couldn't get online.
You're right.
Yes, sir.
So my biggest criticism, I don't know what was said, but my thing was, is he was against Marcus Garvey in the beginning. But right. later on, something snapped in him, and he wound up moving to Africa, and I think he died in Africa. Is that correct?
Yeah, he died in Ghana. That's correct.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. See,
okay.
So because we got individuals now that I'm not giving up on a lot of people, a lot of our people, totally. I'm just trying to go ahead and push them to and keep them corralled in a little corner so I can go ahead and try to dismantle that voice, because that voice is also being heard by some others, and then they carry on that message. That's one thing I'm trying to do, is to keep them off to the side and keep pushing my stuff going. And if I need to confront them every now and then, I do. But we got to go ahead and keep it like that, because a lot of us don't realize that, hey, we out here in this big ocean, we sinking, we drowning, and you got an individual who's offering a way to go ahead and save yourself. You don't want to take that. You want to keep on trying to tread water when you know you can't. And you know you ain't going to be able to go ahead and make it. You're about to drown. Your arm's about to give out. Your leg's about to give out. But somebody's offering you a way to save yourself, and you don't want to deal with that. So another person throws a rope out there, a line out there, a life vest, and you don't want to take that. So you know, what's your point? What do you want to go ahead and keep tearing down, or what do you keep on pushing away some kind of help if you ain't got no other alternative? I mean, that's the biggest problem we got amongst a lot of black folks, and they want to jump on and listen to the nonsense and the BS. But later on, they go ahead and begin to realize that, hey, look, maybe I should have jumped on it, like W.B.E.B. Du Bois. He realized that, hey, a lot of his points was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing, Rob, with a lot of that, sometimes when they finally realize it, it's almost too late.
Exactly.
You know, because the damage is done then, and you got to spend more time reversing the damage than it took, you know, to do it right the first time.
Yep.
So you have to really worry about those things.
Yeah. It's sort of like, and it's some individuals, man, I mean, you've encountered them. It's like when they talk, it's like that bottom lip comes up over their head and closes their ears.
Yeah.
It's like, man, all you blah, 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 and I just see your lip just come right over the top of your head. You ain't seeing what I'm talking about, and you don't want to hear what I'm talking about. But you want to go ahead and try to keep on mumbling and running your mouth, and you're not offering no way to go ahead and get your ass to go ahead and, oops, sorry, to get yourself to see what's going on. And you want to go ahead and keep trying to tear down what we're building. It's a lot of us out here like that. I don't want to harp on that too much, but I think that's one of our major problems, is we got too many people from within just trying to tear us down.
Wow. Great point. Oh, somebody was on the line.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good point. Hold on. Let me bring somebody else in so we can see what they got to think on this conversation. All right, 111, welcome to the show. Who do I have here?
Hey.
Hey, Maze, how are you?
I'm just fine.
A lot of us
took things from the people that we learned that was older people, and you hear a lot of people, young people, saying that older people don't know what they're talking about. So when you think about Tuskegee University and what they have now and what they're doing now, they're teaching people how to garden, and some people already know how to garden, so they can have something to eat and put in their freezer and do like the squirrels do. So a lot of prepared people are not prepared to do like the squirrels. And then other people complain about what other people doing to make a change. As I always say, do your change and don't worry about somebody else's, and somebody else's to making a change just like you are. But they ain't got to broadcast it. Mm-hmm. Everybody don't want everybody to know what they're doing, because they ain't there for show. If you're there for show, you want everybody to know. But if you dare to help somebody, that's how you do it. And that's how a lot of things got done that people that have not even heard about that gave and did for this country that don't nobody even know nothing about. Unless somebody tell them. And that's the way some people want to live. Do things for people and not even let them know that they did it. So sometimes when I hear some lip services, I'm just sitting there listening, and I ain't never even nothing nobody else had. From Al Sharpton to nobody else, if they did something, they did it, and if they didn't, they didn't. Because everybody didn't like Du Bois. Everybody didn't like Booker T. Everybody didn't like Martin Luther King. But everybody was doing their own things, and somebody accomplished something. That's the way I see things.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, that's a very interesting.
Yes, but I don't like nobody giving me no kudos, because I'm not looking for kudos from nobody. I just say and speak my mind and say how I see things. Because a lot of people don't know how to plant a garden, and a lot of people don't know how to can. There's a lot of people, things people don't do, but other people teach them because they knew how to do it and they learned from these very same people.
To add to your point, Maze.
But they don't need a group to do it.
To add to your point, you know, canning, going ahead and dealing with farming, gardening, because the individuals was trying to teach the other people who didn't have the knowledge the importance of it. And importance, the biggest important part of that is do it this way or you could die. Okay? Mm-hmm. You're going to have to eat. If you don't want to eat, then you could die. You don't want to go get caught in a situation with, you know, with your pants down, so to speak, where you ain't got no way to feed yourself.
But I'm saying you don't have to be to stand up in the crowd and let everybody know that you're doing it. Just do it, teach somebody, and go to another group and teach them. As long as you know you're teaching, you don't have to worry about what other people think.
That is standing up in a crowd, actually, Maze, if you think about it, because you're trying to go ahead. Yes, it is, Maze.
It's like this, Chef Rob. If you teach a group of people and they learn how to do something, you go to the next group, they just going to know you did it and they're going to be doing it.
If I don't go ahead and let that next group know I'm here, if I don't get out and go ahead and speak on it, how they going
to
know I'm here?
They don't need to know.
Unless I get into that crowd and tell them.
You looking for a change, or are you looking about who did it? You looking for a change.
I think you're talking about two different things. I'm looking to go ahead and help my people, and I'm trying to help. I'm helping my people through a certain way. But if they don't know I'm here, how am I going to go ahead and get them that help?
The ones that you're around. True. The ones that you're around that you're helping, they know it.
So they know it. So in order to go ahead and help the masses, we can do a lot better if we go ahead and help everyone. But we can't
do a lot better.
Let me finish,
okay.
Maze. We can do a lot if we help everyone. But we can't go ahead and reach everyone.
Help everyone.
Maze, could you let me finish, please? But we can't help anyone. So we got to go ahead and do it in small spoonfuls. That's how we do it. But you know that we'll go ahead and let anybody know that this small spoonful can go ahead and help you with your situation, you're going to have to go ahead and let them know what's in the bottle I'm feeding you. So you're going to have to come to these. Let me finish, Maze. You're going to have to come to these different individuals, and sometimes you're going to have to stand up in a crowd. I don't want to get patted on my back. I want us all to be equal so we can go ahead and go to certain areas and not have to worry about the certain ills, the illegal activity that's going on in the neighborhood. So I ain't got to worry about, hey, look, you done lost your job, you done lost this, lost your house, that you stop begging, now you're going to go ahead and pick up a gun and rob me. I want us all equal, and the best way to do that is to go ahead and try to go ahead and get on the same page. Everybody's not going to get on the same page, but at least go let them know that I'm trying to help. I got a plan. Check out my plan.
Now you finished.
Did you hear anything I said, Maze? Did you hear anything I said?
I heard everything you said. Can I finish so I can explain something to you? They have a house where they have these men. They're working, and they live in a homeless shelter, and they went from a homeless shelter, they get a job to where they get their own place. These men, they have dinners every day, and then they cook for them every day, and you have people feeding them every day, and for each one of them, it's about 25 in the house, and when that 25 move out, another 25 move in, those are on their way, and they reach back and help that other group. Don't nobody know nothing about this place unless somebody tell you about it. That's what I'm saying. There's places all around this country like that. Isn't it like maybe where you in Chicago? They got one some other place. People are doing things, but they don't make no recognition for it. They helping people. They not out there trying to get a newspaper or a TV spot or somebody to hold up their chest to see what they're doing. Everybody's not like that.
And then they're
not envying other people. They just doing what they got to do.
I think what you did was confuse what I was
saying. No, I didn't.
But yes, you did. Let me give.
Isn't it helping to pass it on?
Let me give this to you, Maze. You talk about the people in the homeless shelter. What's the problem in what I'm trying to do to prevent people from even having to look for that help?
Ain't nothing wrong with what you're doing. And
you
have a problem with what other people do.
I never did. I don't think you're not paying attention.
I don't think that is what Rob is saying. And Maze, if we even use your what you just said, you know, actually,
what's wrong with it?
Somebody's going to find out, because if you're doing good, word is going to spread. All right, if you're doing bad, word is going to spread. Now, the thing is, once it comes to you, how are you going to react? Are you going to go ahead and see if it's good, or are you going to take everybody's word for it being something wrong with it? You know, and a lot of times in our community, that is exactly what happens. You know, somebody is actually doing something to try and help others, i.e. this homeless shelter you're talking about. Well, you know, they go out and do certain things. But instead of spreading the word of the good they're doing, you know, a lot of individuals would turn it around and bring the negativity into that, you know, like, oh, man, they just walk around begging, what have you. And then that's everything, you know, is the negative connotation attached to that faith when it's actually a positive, but nobody is taking a stance to try and go and find out because you believe in what the negative is saying, the naysayers are saying. So I understand what you're saying, but, you know, I'm kind of
with
Rob
on this. You're missing the point.
What point are you making then?
If you got 25 men in the house, that 25 get a job and get their own place, and 25 come behind them, and they turn around and help that 25, isn't that helping people? Is it about helping people, or is it getting a group and starting off something?
But, Mays, that's what we just kept, we were saying. I don't know how you keep twisting it to make it sound something else, but that's what we said. It's still helping each other, Mays.
That's what
different.
I know. But the way Chef Raw want to do it, everybody don't want to do it his way.
You don't want to do it my way,
they don't
man.
Need
it's
a
just
speaker to come
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
You don't want to
just
do it
want to argue with
I don't
Bob
have to do it
that.
Your way. I've been doing stuff all of my life, and I don't
right,
have to
okay.
do it.
I'm proud of you. What you just tell me about getting not getting passed
and
on
I didn't
the
say I was not proud of you, what you're doing. I'm just saying everybody don't want to do it your way.
You just say you're not out here to get the
recognition. All right, hold on. May's trying to bring one of them fallacies up in here. We're not having that.
No, I'm not bringing those fallacies. I'm just bringing the truth of my people that don't want to
do it. Let's keep the law flowing.
All right, at ease, Mays. Don't make me go military on you now.
We can go that way together.
All right, hold on. Let me bring these other callers in. All right, let's see. We have come on already.
This is Beasley. I agree with Mays.
Okay. We got Beasley, of course.
I agree with Mays, and I feel like you guys are indirectly talking about me. Because my views may be different than yours.
Didn't I just say, wait a minute, if I want to talk about you, I would tell you I'm talking about you, Beasley, okay? So hold on, wait a minute.
But I can talk about y'all.
Let me get spanked. Beasley, I'm going to tell you like I told Mays, at ease, troop. All right.
I'm not your troop, Mr. Talk. I'm just calling into your show. I'm not your troop. I ain't never been in nobody's army where they told me what to do.
Oh, Lord have mercy. All right, hold on. All right, Mr. Michigan, you there? Well, yeah, y'all just trying to start me today. All right, Mr. Michigan, you there? Okay, I guess he got himself on mute. Let me bring 111 in also. We not going there with y'all today. Y'all be trying me. All right. See, I told you, I be having trouble with my system today. I don't know what's going on. 111, are you there? I know you're not Beasley, so who am I talking to on this end? Okay, anyway, while we try and get them all in, go ahead, Beasley. Spout what you got to spit.
I mean, I'm listening to Rob talk. And it's like either his way or no way, that his line of thinking and the way he sees the world and the way he decides to do it is the right way, and he's intolerant of any other view. I agree with what Mays is saying. She's been doing things the way that she likes to do them and the way that she sees the world and what works for her for a long time. And I'm the same way. My experience isn't the same as Rob's. My goals and aspirations... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That goes back to you. That goes back to your belief of live and let live, right?
Live and let live has to do with being tolerant of people that are different, that have different views, opinions, and lifestyles. See, I can be tolerant of whatever Rob chooses to do. That's fine, but that may not be what I choose.
And that was my point. If you don't want to go here and deal with what I'm doing, move on.
It's not even move on, Rob. I'm over here in my lane.
And it's like this.
Do it the way you want.
Here's the thing. What Mays brought up about the people living in the shelter, you didn't address that because you didn't go ahead and give me a way to get stop us from even go ahead looking for that help in the first place. Deal with that one, Beasley.
Well, there's a shelter probably about 6 or 7 blocks away from where I live. And it's a homeless shelter. And I'll be frank. You know, anybody can end up homeless.
Exactly.
But some people, because of their choices, have ended up in shelters.
So how do you prevent them from getting into the shelters, Beasley?
Man, that's their responsibility.
See,
my
job
is keeping myself out of the shelter.
So how could you criticize what I was saying and you just said what you said?
Well, Chef Ross,
I'm not playing any runaround game with you. You do what you do, but don't criticize what anyone else does.
Who did I criticize?
That has a different opinion than you.
Who did I criticize?
Hold up. Wait a minute. Hold up.
The whole tone in all of your voices is an argument.
Wait a minute.
The whole tone of both of your voices is an argument.
Getting away from what we're wanting to talk about.
Well, can I get back on the topic?
No.
I have a question.
Yeah, you're the one who started this nonsense.
No, you missed the whole point,
Chef Rob. Ask your question real fast.
He missed the whole point. I said they in the shelter, they left the shelter because they got jobs. They was just there for the moment because they were on hard times.
And
what's wrong with them doing that?
So how do you prevent them from going ahead and getting to the shelter? Neither one of you want to deal with that.
How do you prevent them?
Yes.
Man, you know.
Again,
man,
there were jobs for everybody in the country.
People end up in shelters. People end up in shelters for a variety of different reasons.
So why are we not checking on our fellow man to go ahead and see if they need help? You miss
me. I have family and friends to be concerned about, much less a stranger.
Okay. Well, then what you call in for?
Because you were talking about
why can't I call in?
Okay,
wow.
Fred,
the world
okay,
works bigger than what you think.
Booker T. Washington, what do you have to contribute to the topic?
What do you have to contribute to the topic?
I contributed to Booker T. Washington.
I did.
Booker T. Washington's been dead 100 years.
So
he has
just
no effect
about
on what's going on.
You just supposed to forget about
it? I'm going to shut this down real fast. All right, go ahead, Mr. Michigan. I hear you, man.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, let me just say this before I make my point. I don't know. You know, it went sideways, but I heard everything May said and also what Chef Rob was saying. And really, I think there's just a misunderstanding. Both of their points were valid. They actually were not even confrontational. Now, I don't know how they got turned into a confrontational conversation because none of what either one of them said was confrontational, and they both were correct. Ladies is correct. And in most cases, in the African-American experience, it's almost better to do things covertly. So I know nobody would disagree with that, considering the history. So what Chef Rob was saying and what she was saying was not confrontational. It wasn't even a push and pull, so I don't know how we got there. But the question I had with the Booker T., now, one of the reasons why they were so successful because we were more concentrated in certain parts of the country, and then we began to spread it. So that's how they were able to organize those markets. Now, looking at today, with us so spread around the country, I just wanted to ask the panelists, what if we don't seize control of some markets here in America, I think it's going to be difficult for us to build an economic foundation. We're going to have control of some types of market, whether it be in farming, technology, manufacturing. So the question is, do you see any particular market that we could corner? And then if so, what would be the strategy to move that throughout the nation?
Who are you just
I think there's one, but go ahead, Rob.
It has to be a bunch of different strategies, a bunch of different ways to go ahead and come at this problem. One way is just not going to do it, okay, because it wasn't one way that just got us into this problem. There was a coordinated effort to go ahead and put us into this problem. So what I'm trying to support is my foundation trying to teach people about farming and agriculture. If you can, once you grow it, teach you how to, you can eat it, and once you grow it, teach you how to wear it, put it on your feet, whatever. That is a big thing that we need to go ahead and control because we got too many of our people going ahead and want to spend their money on materialism type stuff. You know, I like looking good. I spend money on clothes, but sometimes you got to go ahead and sometimes you stand in that line like, I don't think I should give them this credit card. I don't think I should give them this cash because there's something else I need to take care of. A lot of us don't seem to realize it, what that money could go ahead and go toward, that savings for a rainy day because you might have some problems. We're just living for that moment. So the one thing that I think we can go ahead and deal with right off the bat is just straight dealing with food because later on is a lot of us seem to have these crazy health problems. diabetes, high blood pressure, low blood pressure, you know, this, that, this, you know, on dialysis, and everything is contributed to, everything come back to your diet. So it can go ahead, you know, you go ahead and try to go ahead, let's try to go ahead and deal with the farming and agriculture piece, because later on you see that, hey, look, and save you a lot of money and save your life.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, Rob, because I was going to say farming and agriculture also. But when you say what you said about spending the money, that took me back to Monday's show when we talked about Nanny Helen Burroughs and her 12 things the Negro must do for himself, right? And number one is the Negro must learn to put first things first. The first things are education, development of character, trade, and home ownership. And on the bottom it says the Negro puts too much of his earnings in clothes and food and show and in having what he calls a good time instead of what he needs. You know, so, I mean, that was like, woo! you hit that right on the head. What?
I have a question. If
yes,
the Negro, face. I mean, who wrote that?
Who wrote what?
What you just read?
Nanny Helen Burroughs.
Nanny Helen Burroughs. Okay, I was thinking about something I heard you say when you said that the Negro had to keep his house clean and the Negro had to be dressed. But back in those days, they had to have starch white shirts, starch everything. They had to be sharp as a tack to do those things that they were doing in those houses. And everything that they did, they had to be sharp to do it. So how were they teaching people to do that when they were already doing it? That's just a question.
They just didn't come out starching shirts and things, okay?
They had to have a white gloves.
Somebody had to teach them, Maze. Somebody had to show them what to do. All right? Let me bring Ebony in. You're not getting me sideways, Maze.
I'm not getting you sideways.
Hello, Ebony. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Hi, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi.
Hello,
hi, how are you, Maze? I just wanted to say about the feeding bit and the agriculture, you know, one of the things that I absolutely agree with is, you know, that as a race, we need to learn to feed ourselves. I think we're so used to eating other people's food grown, you know, manufactured, I don't know, pesticides, all the rest of it. We get processed stuff, but we live off, you know, other people's food. Now, it's not food that we grow ourselves. And we don't, you know, even countries that like Africa and Caribbean, you know, what was that? even
no, that was you. Go ahead.
Yeah,
that's me
handling
business.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, somebody got kicked out.
Even where we've got countries like Africa and the Caribbean, we still, in those countries, are moving away from, you know, making our own food, planting our own food, growing our own food. And, you know, we resort to McDonald's and everything else that's processed. And it's a shame because that really is the way that we can sustain ourselves, the way that we can make sure that we are healthy and that we know, because we know what we're putting in our mouths. And I think that is, you know, outside of, you know, owning a house or whatever, because, you know, at the end of the day, you never own the land. So, you know, we don't own land. That's another thing. If you own land, then there's more reason, I think, to own what's on the land. So there's something about us also understanding how the whole ownership thing works. But I think you're absolutely right. If we stop focusing on, you know, the surface wealth, which is about cars and clothes and stuff like that, and we look more at, you know, building, you know, creating businesses to sustain ourselves, trying to keep our money in our communities, you know, we would have a better future. And that's universal for Black people. It's not even just Americans. It's the same in the UK. It's the same in the Caribbean. It's the same in Africa. Wherever you go, we have the same issue. So I just wanted to say that's a universal thing. It's not just Americans.
Bye-bye.
You got a troll.
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
Yeah,
I thought you could mute them with the administration switch.
I'm not even muting them.
I thought that was Lisa playing a game.
Man,
I thought it was Lisa playing with his machine.
Oh, I did want to chime in on with Chef Rob and with Evan.
Mm-hmm. Hello, 111?
Yes, it's me.
No, we've lost your guy.
Oh, hold on. Okay.
I guess I'm on mute.
Okay. And, I think one of the things I know that we tried to do on the platform was so far, I think in a couple of episodes ago, we did bring some solutions, actually. We talked about a variety of different forms of supplemental income, and we talked about a variety of different strategies to fund different community-orientated, different forms of economic development, whether you do it, you know, locally, in a local way, where you can do it with small groups or large groups in your neighborhood and so on. So we kind of laid out some ideas, and I think we're going to continue to do that on the platform, come up with a variety of different solutions. So I know that some solutions have been provided, not just today, but like on some, you know, previously archived episodes as well. A variety of stuff has been suggested. I think the question is, some stuff is we can apply, and sometimes, you know, we kind of overlook them, you know, because sometimes when solutions are provided, you know, sometimes people just kind of bat their eyelashes and kind of overlook it. So I think solutions are installed even in the discussions when we talk about people who came before us and some of the methods that they use. Like Jeff was saying earlier, you could apply a lot of these principles to our current state. I mean, Black Wall Street was an awesome example of stuff that could be done now. So I think there are many, many, many different methods out there, and I think we're going to continue to create and provide more and more methods. But I think because this is such a loving environment, regardless of some of the miscommunication, we're going to keep loving on our people and providing solutions as we've been doing.
I think what we need to do is stop talking. A lot of the time we do a lot of talking in our community. And I think one of the great things would be is to actually have some actions, some outcomes from our conversation. You know, I'd love for people to, you know, get out a little action plan out and we start ticking stuff off that we actually do, because I think the solutions are out there. We actually do know what we need to do. I think the question is, are we prepared to do it? Are we prepared to, check in some of the things that we take for granted, you know, the use of the credit card, the endless credit and whatever. Are we able to do that, or are we just talking about it as if it's some romantic idea? And I think that's the problem for me, that a lot of people don't walk the talk. They just say, well, yeah, let's do this, let's do that, it sounds great. But how many people actually will be prepared to make one lifestyle change, you know, even a month, in order to make a difference? That's the question, the real question.
You know, where do you find those people? Where can you find those
like
people?
I would like to see.
Some of us take these steps in our own personal lives.
Yeah, that's true.
And have been doing so for years.
Chef Robinson.
I know answers and solutions of how to affect my life. And when I affect my life, I can affect others. I am not going backwards and going to work in no fields. I'm sorry. That's not a viable answer for me.
When was it? Beasley. When was the last time? Have you been to Water State Farm?
No, it seems to be that you can't disagree on this show anymore.
Well, Beasley, have you been to a Water State Farm? Have you been to a farm in 2014? Have you been to one?
I go to the grocery store. I earn money. I can go to the nice grocery store.
That didn't answer my question.
I'm not interested.
Simple,
no,
yes
I haven't
no.
been to a farm. I've seen a farm.
Okay.
I go buy organic vegetables. I'm not interested in getting my hands dirty and working on a farm in that environment.
That's
not me.
That's off of you, Beasley. I think
and that's okay, because I earn a profit off of the product I sell. That's the way that it works. I'm not interested in putting on overalls and working in a field. I know how to work behind a desk in an office and deal with people.
Are you really aware how much the organic foods cost? You're talking to a chef, remember? I'm not fake with that.
I'm really aware. I'm probably 15 miles away from farmland. Sometimes I drive out there to buy fruits and vegetables.
So you're really
sometimes
okay,
I don't.
But you're really aware of how overpriced that stuff is. And
it's
don't
very
much.
Overpriced. Most of the time I won't buy organic fruits and vegetables if I'm in the supermarket because
okay.
It's too expensive.
So why don't you give me your money to help with this foundation so I can teach some young peers?
Why don't you give me your money? I don't fall for the okey-doke. I don't give people
you just
my money
did,
cause
you
because they have some idea. I'm getting a
just
product
did.
In return.
You
Rob,
just
I'm not giving you or anybody
you just,
else to give these shows any money.
Okay, hold on.
I know you guys are cons.
You
I don't know you like that.
You brought overpriced organic food.
You know what? Wait a minute. Slow down, y'all. Number one, you know, anyway, go ahead on Michigan. Go ahead, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad, brother, and it's laughable at the same time. You know, let me tell you why I say that. Because you're talking about brothers who are intelligent. Just from listening to everybody. But to see how easy it is for us to, if somebody steps on our shoe, that we go off in left field. I mean, just it doesn't take much. Just some small, and we are talking about something that has absolutely nothing to do with where we need to be headed. It's laughable to the outside, but it's sad internally. Now, let me go back to the filing. Now, in Francis Crest Wrestling and Brother Neely Fuller, they said when you're building a society, there's 9 people interaction areas, meaning there's only 9 areas where people interact, where you see organization and things of that nature. Now, as far as farming and agriculture, I'm aware that I know that there's a Black Farmers Association. I know that as a matter of fact. Now, I know it's about to dwindle down to nothing. I know that as a matter of fact. So any organization as it relates to food development, mechanized farming, and things of that nature, that's a conversation and a plan that should be developed within that domain. Now, that's how everybody else does it. Now, if we're going to do it all ourselves, that tells you why we're so far behind the eight ball. Having said that, are any of us members of, I'm not even a member of it, but are any of us members of or supports or even knows of the Black Farmers Association? Do we know the products that they produce? Are they on the shelves? What's the name of them? I mean, this is what we're supposed to be moving for solutions.
The brother said
farming and feeding ourselves. Well, there is an organization who has a mission statement. Whether or not they're successful, we can talk about it, but that's their mission. Do we know their products? What stores are they in? Let's start there.
Let me help you with something real quick, brother. Another reason they go ahead and push me, try to go ahead and get my I have a 501c3 dealing with farming and agriculture. Another thing that pushed me to get that was me trying to contact them brothers from the Black Farmers Association, and I don't want Beasley to say them crazy, but I think they got over $1 billion. They won their law part of their lawsuit. And so when you go ahead, you try to make that phone call, try to connect with them, you get recordings, you got offices that are no longer existing, you know, and it's almost nobody you're going to go ahead and get with. I can't remember Boyd. I think his last name is Boyd. The guy was in charge of the whole thing. Almost nobody's going to get back to you. And you have to go ahead and try to find local Black farmers, because trying to go to that association, it's almost not going – that was my experience. I could not be successful with contacting these brothers, but I was successful in dealing with some local Black farmers.
Okay, so that's good to know. That's good information.
Can I say something? But people don't get upset.
Brace yourself.
See, there he goes. See, there he goes with his smart remarks. That's not what
ain't
I think.
No,
you don't have to know the Black Farmer Association. You can know a Black Farmer. They do products all the time. You know where a Black Farm is? Go to his house or go to his – well, there's a lot of places where you can go pick peas. You can pick greens. You can just go out there and pay him when you finish. If you want to do it that way, if you don't want to go to the grocery store, they got the farmer's market. You got Black Farmer's market. You don't have to find a specific Black Farmer. Or you can do your own garden in your own backyard and go get what you want and cook it.
Yeah, good idea.
And in Tuskegee, at Tuskegee Institute, they have a 2-week training to teach you how to plant.
Yeah, I was kind of just saying that. But.
And everything don't cost money. Some people do things and don't cost a dime.
Yeah, because there's a couple
of universities. For you to know a trade or something to do to feed you. That's all that needs to be done.
Yeah, but they...
Mace, that goes right back to what Booker T. Washington was saying the whole time.
But a lot of people are not following what he did. They're not even trying to find these places.
They don't know what he's saying because it's not being pushed and promoted. Garbage and nonsense is being pushed and promoted. How you can go do twerking in the middle of the street is pushed and promoted.
If it's out there, you can find it.
Okay,
all you got to do is look up Black Farmers.
But if
and all of the things, I even like. I like getting stuff from the Amish people.
Maze, once again, go ahead, Rob. I'll let you go and get yours in, Rob.
But if you don't know what's out there, Maze, then how do you know what's out there? Okay, what's being pushed and promoted is a lot of the nonsense to go ahead and get some people locked up and thrown in jail. That's
anything,
what's pushed and promoted. The schools are not black.
Anything
schools,
out there you want to find is out there.
Again, Maze, the schools in America are undereducating our people and miseducating our people. So you can go ahead and talk to almost any young person right now, and they'll probably tell you a teacher that they know that have picked out a person in their class and say, hey, look, you'll never amount to anything, you'll never be anything. But he's not just telling that student there; he's pretty much telling the rest of the class there and showing it.
So,
hey.
Why? How do you expect me to try to build with people that will throw away anything you have to say because it doesn't fit into what the way they see things? Like-minded people are able to build together. Especially for someone that already has a path set and knows what to do. Why would I take my time and effort to bring someone into my fold when they're going to be questioning everything and with all their own ideas? Rob, you should be building your own thing.
I never questioned what
you
Mace
shouldn't
did.
Be asking anybody for
I
anything
never questioned
for
what
donations.
Mace did. And Beasley, yes, I should. I have a nonprofit foundation and a foundation. I'm trying to help people. And Beasley, you're somewhat of a hypocrite, Beasley. You're not contributing. The topic was basically talking about Booker T. Washington, and I didn't hear you mention too much about Booker T. Washington.
Because you were busy talking about everybody's lip dropping and everything else. That's what changed the subject. It's
yeah,
like the fellowship
nobody,
thing
no,
that you
so,
have
going.
It's my
fault, Rob.
Again, we've got sidetracked again. See,
well,
Booker T. Washington.
Again,
we have started once again to get sidetracked, and we're not accomplishing anything. Look, Beasley, okay, so you say you got yours, and you know, why should you be bothered with somebody questioning you how you got yours and all that when
you're
on your way? No, I'm listening. Go ahead. I must have misunderstood. Go ahead.
No, you got it about right. Somebody like Chef Rob is argumentative. He's loud, and he swears he knows the right way. Then he should take his right way. I couldn't work with someone like him.
Here's the thing.
I wouldn't even try to work with someone like him. what I've learned throughout my years of being here is, you know, in order to be a success, you have to ask questions. If you're not asking questions, think you got all the answers.
Rob's not asking questions. Rob's not asking questions. Rob's giving directions and orders.
Rob is talking on something that is in his area of expertise. See, he's doing it. See, that's the thing. He's doing it. So
I don't want to become a farmer. I don't want to get dirt under my nails. I don't want to have mud on my shoes. I'm gonna stay here in my home office and do what I do.
Okay, well, if it comes down to the time where, you know, you no longer can get to the grocery store, what have you, you know, hopefully you have enough in your home office to where you can pull a book out and read and learn how to plant something, you know, or go fishing or something. You know, that's all I'm saying. But what we're trying to do is give you other solutions, and that is what, you know, see, the conversation we're having right now, I can actually see this conversation with Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey, DeBose. I can see this type of conversation going on right here. The same type of stuff going on. Because that's just the way we are. Yes, it is. It's the same type of conversation.
Can I explain something? It's something different going on because somebody else can have a different idea, and it's like, I agree with you. I don't give my ideas because somebody agree with me because I don't want nobody to agree with me. I'm just saying that we doing things different, and it's not the same.
Maze. I told you a long time ago, and I'll be dang on you still do it. It's all about okay. I. You always got I in it. I. See, and then once again.
What's wrong?
Again,
you say I.
As I said before. I said, we have, I can see the same type of conversation going on with Marcus Garvey and his crew and during his time because it's all circulating all over again, and that's why we where we are now.
You want to know what's similar between what's going on right now with us. I'll make it real quick. What's going on right now with us in this conversation and what went on between Marcus Garvey, W.B. Du Bois, and Booker T. Washington and their followers is that they all had a different plan, okay? Booker T. Washington would say, fine, we're not going to try to integrate. Let us make our money and let us show our people how and just leave us alone, and we're not going to try to integrate. W.B. Du Bois said, yes. We should become educated, and we should have access to everything. And then he embraced Pan-Africanism. Marcus Garvey was like, man, later for all this shit, let's get some damn boats and go back to Africa. They all had followers, and they all had a different ideology and an all different plan. And they did not work together. They did not work together. They had separate organizations with all separate ideas.
Let me show you something else.
Am I right or wrong?
You're right. I'm going to actually add to it, and I want you to pay attention to this. Marcus Garvey had a plan, let's go back to Africa, right?